This is the Downeast Journal on Public Radio East. Art. It's created with imagination and expresses feeling, and sometimes it's found in the most unusual places. Take a stroll in downtown New Bern, and you might find handmade treasures hiding in trees along the sidewalks. A project called Artwork Found seeks to promote creative awareness by leaving small pieces of art around public places and hopes someone will find it and give it a good home. Michael E. Rose Watson is a local conceptual-based artist and ceramics instructor at Craven Community College.
This is making random acts of art to put in public spaces for other people to find, just for strangers to find, because what you want to do is share the experience of art.
Watson is also the founder of the Artwork Found project. Similar projects are happening across the country, but she says the idea came from an art conference she attended in 2012.
It seems to be this is a new thing that's sort of going around for schools and universities, is to have students make things and leave them around campus for other people to find. So I made an assignment at school. So it started 2 years ago at Craven Community College, and I made it an assignment for my students. And they each had to make 10 pieces of art of something out of clay and leave it all over campus. It was a huge success, and I just kept going with it.
Eventually, other artists heard about the idea and wanted to participate. Watson started the website artworkfound.com in January of last year as a way to let local artists submit their work and keep track of lost art that's been found. Watson says last November was the largest lost art event in downtown New Bern to date.
We made a little blurb on our Facebook page, hey, who wants to be a part of losing art for Black Friday? And we had 50, 60, 70 artists just come together and say, we want to do this. So on Black Friday, we just had paintings and jewelry and just all kinds of things just all over downtown. It was just this huge, huge, wonderful thing that just happened.
There's a variety of art that's already been placed around downtown New Bern, including vases, decorative ceramic tiles, pottery, jewelry, and small paintings. Watson encourages artists to be creative in coming up with items to hide, but this artistic freedom yields some pretty unusual items, such as ceramic eyeballs, whimsically painted birdhouses, and a sphere painted like a Pokeball from the animated TV show and card game Pokemon. Each item includes a tag with the words free and, if found, please send a message and photo of new home.
People have been sending in emails of things that they found. So if you go to the site, you'll see artists where they've what they've left. And then there's a section of what's been found. And then it's just all these people that have found work and art, and they take it to their home and they have a little something to say. And it's pretty cool.
Mary Ann Horn is an artist and board member for Community Artist Will. Her primary medium is acrylic and watercolor paint, but she loves experimenting.
I would consider myself a dabbler.
Horn's first Artwork Found experience was during the Black Friday Lost Art event. Since then, she's placed 4 different pieces downtown for people to find, including small paintings and a pair of copper earrings she made.
It's very exhilarating, you know what I mean? To first of all, share. It takes a lot of courage to share if you're especially a new artist. And then it's so exhilarating. I have to say that I peeked to see somebody pick up one of my pieces. I went around the corner and just sort of waited and peeked.
Most of the lost artwork is placed on Craven and Middle Streets in downtown New Bern. However, Michael E. Rose Watson says when some of the artists that are part of the project go on vacation, they leave their art in a public space with the tag attached, hoping someone will find it.
We've had pieces go to Canada, California, up north, Massachusetts, New York, and we've also had, I have a lot of students that are Marines, you know, spouses, whatnot, so their spouses are taking pieces of work over to the Middle East as well and leaving them over there.
Watson has hopes of Artwork Found being a global project, maybe even reaching out of this world.
If an astronaut finds a piece of something and it ends up, you know, orbiting the planet, I mean, nothing would please me more than to see something, you know, with the little tag artworkfound.com, you know, floating in space. It would just be just the best.
Watson says almost all of the lost artwork is found. However, only about 5% of people send a message saying they've found a piece. Of the people who reply, most of them have a great story to tell. Chris Wagner, is an acrylic painter from New Bern. He recently placed a small painting in Mitchell's Hardware in downtown New Bern.
With the help of the owner, Greg, we found a nice little spot on a wine shelf. And went back that afternoon just to see if we had any luck on it. He said, yeah, I've got this great story. This woman came up clutching your painting and just this huge smile on her face and said, we've got a dog that's just like the one in this painting. And it reminds us so much of him. And when they were able to get home, the image in my painting was a boy sitting with a dog. They recreated it in the photograph. And so they posted it back to the website, the Lost and Found website. So it's kind of neat to see my image with the one that they had taken.
The goal of the project isn't so much to track the piece of art and find out where it eventually ends up. Rather, Watson says it's to inspire and encourage people to reflect on how important art is in our lives.
I put out several hundreds of these little packets, little ceramic seeds for people to just hold on to, and what they are, seeds of possibilities. It's your ideas. So it's, what are your ideas? How are your ideas different from our ideas, my ideas, anybody else's? What is it that you love and you want to create that I haven't thought about? You know, surprise us. Let's surprise each other. How creative can we be? And that's what I want to bring back, that spark in our world, in our culture, in our community.
Anyone can be a part of the Artwork Found project by leaving a random act of artistic kindness in a local public place. There are some tips on places to leave your work so it will be found, and what types of work to leave at the project website, artworkfound.com. We've provided a link at our website, along with some photos of the art you might find hiding in downtown New Bern.
This is the Down East Journal. The North Carolina Museum of Art is hosting its first ever design exhibition, featuring the largest and most diverse group of Porsche automobiles ever on display in a U.S. museum. The exhibit features 22 cars from the 1930s to present day. This week, Jared Brumbaugh spoke with Director of Publications and Co-Curator for Porsche by Design, Barbara Wiederman, about the exhibit.
Where did you get the idea for Porsche by Design?
It was sort of a meeting of the minds. Our director, Dr. Lawrence Wheeler, had been getting to know a collector in Durham and understanding the significance of Porsche as an automobile. And at about the same time, I had the opportunity to see their private collection. And we sort of met and discussed the idea of showcasing automotive design in this way at the Art Museum together. And then Dan Neal, who writes for the Wall Street Journal, is the automotive critic there and a Pulitzer Prize winner, is one who recommended to us Ken Gross, the former director of the Peterson Automotive Museum in L.A. And we quickly got in touch with Ken and discussed it with him further, and he became the guest curator for this exhibition.
Usually when you think of art, you're thinking of paintings and sculpture, and you're not really thinking about cars. It's such an interesting form of art.
It's true. I think a lot of the cars in our exhibition are really just aesthetically beautiful forms. They're almost like the way you'd look at a sculpture. I think you could look at the Type 904 Porsche race/street car from the collector in Portland. As a designer, I also think they're kind of fascinating design stories, in the sense that, unlike a fine artist, when you're a designer, you're working with a team of, you know, engineers, finance people, production people, all working together to get something done, to get it done in time, to get it brought in under the right price. Doesn't always turn out to be a beautiful art object, and we all can think of cars that probably are not that way, but when they do become these stunning aesthetic things that you just love to drive and love to look at, then I think they're really worth celebrating.
Now, there will be a total of 22 cars on display, but there are some highlights to this exhibit. Can you talk about Steve McQueen's iconic Porsche Speedster from 1958?
Oh, I love that car. It's just a beauty. There were only about 3,000 of them made. Chad McQueen lent us that car. His father, Steve McQueen, was quite a race car driver in his own right. Probably, I would say, preferred racing to acting at times, and made that a beautiful race movie called Le Mans. But anyway, Chad inherited that beautiful black Speedster convertible, and he was kind enough to lend it to the exhibition. He was here to celebrate with us for the opening of the exhibition, and he asked us to send him pictures because he's going to miss the car so much.
Now, the exhibit also includes a rare type 804 Formula One race car. Can you tell me about that one?
That one is fascinating as well because for 1 year only, Porsche went into Formula One level racing. The rules changed, that the FIA, changes over time, and Ferry Porsche and his team decided that Porsche probably could potentially win races. They developed this eight-cylinder engine. They built only four of these cars in total, and so it's pretty special to have one. They're not seen very often, so to have one from a collector in Reno in the exhibition is a coup, and we're very excited about it.
Also on display, Janis Joplin's psychedelic Porsche on loan from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum. Can you talk about that one?
Yeah, she bought that car used, and then she had a roadie paint the car for her in psychedelic colors, and he kind of went wild and did all kinds of things, that, including a little picture of the band in one corner and mountain scenes in another and rainbows and flowers, and it's just really fun and very visually of its time. It is actually standing in our West Building, which is where our permanent collection is housed, so it's in there amidst the permanent collection of the state of North Carolina, and it's a showstopper.
Now, I certainly have an appreciation for classic cars, but I love the new technology and today's cars, and I understand the Porsche GT3R race car that's part of the exhibit implements some of that modern innovation.
That is correct. That is actually a concept car, and it was literally in the R&D department at Porsche until just before the exhibition opened, when it was turned over to the Porsche Museum and they loaned it to us. So it has a flywheel where the passenger seat would be that, as you're braking, collects power and then sends that power back out as you come out of a turn. It also has a gasoline engine. So it is a hybrid car that was used sort of as a rolling laboratory for the R&D department at Porsche.
How's the turnout been so far? Has this been a really successful exhibit at the museum?
We have seen a lot of new faces, which is another goal always for us to reach out to all of all North Carolinians with our exhibitions. We are on target for around 100,000 visitors, and that, of course, is very significant, and we're very excited about that.
Barbara Wiederman is the Director of Publications and co-curator for the Porsche by Design exhibit. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
On January 24th through the 27th, there will be a Hoods Up event at the museum where some of the car's engines and interiors can be viewed. If you'd like more information on the Porsche by Design exhibit, go to publicradioeast.org and click on events.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. It's an odd time of year in the garden. The weather keeps fluctuating, and a lot of people just don't quite know what they should be doing in their yards. So this week, we're just going to have a short list of do's and don'ts for the garden. First of all, what to do. Now is a great time to clean up any plant debris from last year. That would be leaves that fell off of trees, branches that may have broken off, any old fruit that may have fallen off fruit trees, any old vegetable plants that are still in beds but not producing. All of that old plant debris can lead to diseases and pest problems next year, as some pests and some diseases will overwinter in that debris, particularly if it's on the soil surface. So clean up, especially around fruit trees and vegetable gardens, and get rid of the debris, especially if you know that there's been a disease in the past. Just putting it in the compost pile might not be good enough in that situation. This cleanup includes cutting down and removing the dead and dying non-woody perennial flowers in your yard. What do I mean by non-woody? Things that come up fresh each year, like daisies and coneflowers. those are the ones that, although they might still have a little green on them now because it's been such an odd year, it's just a good time to cut down and remove all that debris. Things that are more in a shrub shape, that come back with new leaves off of existing stems, those are woody. You don't want to be cutting them back right now. So, what to do? Clean up. It stops diseases from spreading. All right, what don't you want to do this time of year? There's a few more of those things. First of all, don't fertilize anything with nitrogen fertilizer. Fertilization is going to encourage soft, tender growth, especially again if we get some more of this strange warm winter weather. Then when you get a cold snap, that growth is killed and it stresses the plant. There's nothing you have that needs to be fertilized right now. Don't prune yet. I'm talking about your shrubs and trees. It's still too early. Pruning can encourage flushes of new tender growth, and that's something you don't want to happen right now before the really cold winter weather sets in. Hold off a few more weeks, till mid-February probably, before you prune those trees and shrubs. What else should you not do right now? Well, don't apply any pesticide, whether it is an herbicide or an insecticide, without reading the label really carefully and making sure it is exactly what you need for your problem. In addition, you need to read the entire label. That means open that little plastic cover and go through what might be many pages of pesticide information. Inside, you will find dangers that might occur from that pesticide, but really importantly right now, you will find temperatures when the pesticide should and shouldn't be used, and stages of growth of plants when the pesticide should and shouldn't be used. Many herbicides say don't use them when a particular grass is dormant, and grasses are dormant right now, or when they're just breaking dormancy, which may have happened this year in this strange winter. Two more small don'ts. One, don't open your beehives once the weather has turned cold. Unless it's an absolute emergency, breaking open that hive is going to split open the propolis that the bees have placed to stop cold drafts from coming in. It's going to chill what little bit of winter brood there might be, and it's going to truly stress the bees. And finally, if you've got a backyard chicken coop, don't put lights in there to keep the chickens laying hard all winter long if these aren't a source of income for you. If you're just trying to raise healthy, happy chickens that lay some eggs for you and maybe a few friends, give them the break their bodies need in the winter by letting them have a longer period of darkness and a time where they lay fewer eggs. All right, short list of do's and don'ts. Mostly, do stay inside and warm when it's cold and bitter out. When it's not too bad, maybe when the wind's not blowing, bundle up, stroll around, and enjoy the beauty of your yard. Look at the gorgeous color and texture of the bark on various trees and the lichens that may show up now. And I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
The Down East Journal is made possible by our Public Radio East members in partnership with the Richard Chapman Cleave Fund of the North Carolina Community Foundation.
Hi, I'm Paula Poundstone. Did you know that the crappy car you're driving right now would look a whole lot better as an episode of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me? Trust me. Turn your car into the programs you love.
For more information on how to donate your car to Public Radio East, call 866-789-8627 or visit us online at publicradioeast.org.
Hello, I'm Tom the Jazzman, inviting you to join me this Sunday evening right here on PRE, Public Radio East, from 6 o'clock until 11 o'clock. We always have some new, exciting new artists. We also revisit many of the great artists that made jazz so famous. It's America's art form, and we deserve to support it. It's right here on Public Radio East on Sunday evenings from 6 o'clock until 11 o'clock. I'll see you on the radio.
This is the Down East Journal.
GSO?
GSO is go.
GSO Go.
On Thursday at 1:07 p.m., the two-stage Antares rocket launched from the Mid-Atlantic Spaceport in Wallops Island, Virginia.
One. We have ignition.
On board the spacecraft is a satellite named SkyCube, which will be used to take photos and send messages from space. Go Science, a regional science and technology nonprofit based in Greenville, is partnering with Southern Skies for the space project. This week I spoke with Executive Director of Go Science, Roger Connor, about the mission and how they plan to use SkyCube once it's deployed.
It will be docking with the International Space Station. It'll actually be grappled by the International Space Station and brought in. And then a few months from now, it'll actually be placed out into orbit.
And as I understand, Go Science has reserved access time to the satellite SkyCube to take pictures from space and send messages.
Yep, that's correct. The idea for this, really started about a year and a half ago when a colleague of mine in Spain contacted me and told me about a talk that he had heard about someone in the U.S. that was working on doing a public launch of a satellite. They were trying to get it funded by the general public and by organizations. The name of that person is Tim DeBenedictis, and Tim decided to do a crowdfunding campaign in order to raise the money necessary to actually complete the satellite launch. It's still around $50,000 to actually place something on the actual rocket that goes up, plus another $25,000 to $30,000 to actually build the satellite itself. And Go Science is one of the major contributors to help support that campaign, but there's actually thousands of people who have made contributions ranging from $1 up to, $250, $600 or so. And all that together raised enough not only to build one satellite, but to build two satellites. So today we actually just launched one of two satellites. The next one will launch probably about a year and a half from now.
Now, SkyCube, that's the name of the satellite. Can you kind of describe what it looks like? Because I've seen pictures of it. It doesn't look like a typical satellite.
No, it doesn't. And SkyCube is actually a little bit different from other CubeSats in and of itself. CubeSats have actually been around for a long time. They're typically used by universities and the government to do research projects. And they're the size of a small box. And typically the solar panels are mounted on the outside of the box and is able to actually perform experiments or imaging from space. SkyCube is a little bit different in that originally it's shaped like a box, but it actually has deployable solar panels. So once it actually is placed into orbit by the astronauts on the International Space Station, the actual solar panels will unfold from the cube itself. And that does a couple things. It increases the amount of energy that can be generated, but it also gives us a lot more options as far as the type of camera that we can place on it, the size of the computer system. It basically gives you more space to actually place the electronics, and it gives you a lot more flexibility in the industrial design of the actual satellite.
And your organization, Go Science, which is a nonprofit organization, you're using the satellite to take pictures and to send messages kind of as a fundraising thing. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is, for us, it's not, we're using it as an opportunity to also raise funds for the regional science center that's actually being constructed here in Greenville. People can go online and reserve access to take a picture from the satellite or send a message or a tweet from space. And actually, anyone here on Earth can actually receive those messages using an amateur radio because it'll be broadcast to the entire globe. And then we also have the pictures available that people can go to our website at go-science.org and actually reserve those. And then we'll also have schools that will be taking pictures and sending messages out as part of our educational programming tied with the mission. So it's really, it really has a several different strands where we're, you know, raising awareness about GO Science, getting people excited about science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, doing all the education associated with the satellite launch and the mission over the next 6 months to a year, but then also raising funds to help with the construction of the facility here in Greenville.
Sending a message from space, Valentine's Day coming up. I'm sure you'll see a peak interest in that.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get quite a few I love yous, and who knows, maybe a marriage proposal or so from space. Just have to make sure that they're able to receive it on the other end with the radio.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You can find more information about GO Science's space mission and see pictures of the SkyCube satellite at our website, publicradioeast.org.